Jeffrey Smith with us this hour. We'll take your phone calls. One of his books, Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Modified Foods. Fascinating. We're going to be back with Jeffrey in a moment and your calls on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Jeffrey Smith with us. We'll get to your calls as well as we're talking about genetically modified foods as well. And Jeffrey, tell us a little bit about your books.
Well, my first book, Seeds of Deception, is about how it's actually called Exposing Industry and Government Lies About the Safety of the Genetically Engineered Foods You're Eating. And it was written in story format. So it described the corruption of the science, the corruption of the FDA. But it was written in stories that were hard to put down. And so it was written with that angle, and it became the world's best-selling book on GMOs, and it has been for over a decade. But as I traveled around the world and gave it to politicians, they would always have me sign it as a very nice gesture, and then they'd hand it to their staff member, and I realized they'll never see it again. And they don't have time to read a book, and the information just doesn't jump out because it's into stories. So I decided to write another book, which will be free to all of your listeners today.
Did you say free?
I said free. It's free. I'm giving the ebook, a PDF version of the book, away to every one of your listeners today if they go to non-GMOsimprovehealth.com. It's a long URL, but it's easy to remember. Non-GMOsimprovehealth.com. Scroll down, and then you could register and get a link to the PDF of Genetic Roulette, The Documented Health Risks of Genetically Engineered Foods. And that book was written in mind when I was thinking about going to senators and congressmen, and I met with heads of state, and I thought, they have no time. So I need to be able to give them the information that they can read quickly, but when they hand the book to their staff to verify, it needs to have deep details. So I wrote the book in an interesting way that I hadn't seen before, in a two-page spread format, where the left side of the paper is for the attention deficit politician. It has just the sentence at the top, which gives the conclusion. If you're interested, you can read the bullet points and a quote from a scientist, and that's all. That's the only thing you need to read, and you can flip the page. But if you want to read more, the right side has all the details with all the citations to over 1,000 endnotes, and it goes into the details. So I explain at the beginning of the book how you can read it as a quick scan or a casual read or a deep study. And so it's been used all around the world. It's been offered in medical studies. It's been used for politicians. And it sort of created a way to bring all of the health dangers into one place. And once I wrote it, I started to present that evidence to medical conferences here and around the world. And that means now that thousands of physicians and healthcare practitioners are prescribing non-GMO diets. And if you go to non-GMOs, plural, improvehealth.com, there's an article that I wrote for a peer-reviewed journal, but it's also summarized in an easy-to-read format, where I describe, before I spoke to these doctors who were prescribing non-GMO diets, I did not believe people who said that they could tell the difference when they eat a GMO versus not. I thought that the damage was only going to be some subtle change in long-term statistics. But when I started speaking to doctors who had prescribed it, because I had given them the information years earlier, and they had prescribed it to thousands of patients by then, they had seen changes that were so predictable and so consistent. They told me, yes, you know, within a couple of days, anxiety and depression can go away. Within 3 to 7 days, there's a change in the immune status, like allergies, and then digestive problems can take about 2 months, but up to 2 years for repairing. They were describing all these changes, and I said, can I go to your clinic and actually interview your patients? And I did, and it confirmed what they were talking about. And then I went to the farmers and asked them the changes that happened in their pigs when the pigs switched to non-GMO, and it was the same thing. So now I'm not only confident, but I've confirmed it by going to 150 lectures that I was giving, asking the audiences, what have you noticed that has gotten better when you switch to a non-GMO diet? And I got the same answer from so many different audiences. I turned it into a survey, surveyed our list, got over 3,000 responses, and published the results in an article, which you can find at that same website, non-GMOsimprovehealth.com.
Now, what's the latest with butterflies and bees?
Well, you know, it's interesting with Roundup, where if you have a Roundup-ready field, you can spray the field with Roundup, and it doesn't kill the crop, but it kills all of the other plants. Now, one of the plants in the area is the basically the place where the monarch butterfly, the milkweed, the monarch butterfly gives birth or allows the larva to feed.
Mm-hmm.
And so the milkweed is being wiped out, and the monarch butterflies' population numbers are dropping catastrophically.
Yes, that's right.
And so one thing that people can do is they can plant milkweed and in the areas where the migration normally occurs, but it's really a travesty. And the potential for extinction is real. So it is a horrible side effect in the ecosystem. Now with bees, a lot of people are pointing to insecticides based on nicotine. They're neonicotinoids. They're soaked into seeds in a time-release way, and then they end up getting systemically into the plant, and they end up being picked up by the bees, brought back to the hive, and the bees lose the ability to navigate to the hive. So they actually end up with colony collapse disorder and empty hives. Now, it's interesting that with GMOs, the GMO corn seeds, for example, are infused with these neonicotinoids at much higher levels than before, and so they're driving the extinction. But even Roundup, at levels that are normally found in the environment, studies show that that also causes a lack of navigation ability and a drop, a death rate of, I think, 30 to 40%. And so it's interesting that one of the companies, Biologix, that was investigating this was purchased by Monsanto. And this tells me they did not want Biologix to be doing this type of research.
Hmm.
And so we now know from documents that were made public from a lawsuit linking Roundup to cancer, we have the actual memos, the emails between scientists who discovered problems with Roundup in terms of cancer and then decided to cancel the further studies because they did not want to see what the results might bring. And so I think that they probably stopped the kind of research that Biologix was doing that could have implicated Roundup as one of the major factors in why the bees are so in such bad shape right now.
All right, to the phones now we go. Let's go to Suzanne in San Luis Obispo, California, west of the Rockies. Hi, Suzanne.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I do want to enlighten the listening audience that I'm just mom, 60 plus years old, but my younger son is 33, 34, and when he was in college, he'd come home and share with me about GMO and Roundup and Monsanto. And he would say, Mama, 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 this has gone way beyond if those seeds from this farm or their dust cropping or whatever they did flows over to the other farm. And so it be farm one wants royalties because we saved your farm. But didn't you enlighten me on GMO and Roundup? And Roundup is a very dangerous product, and we've known it. But I'm very, very fortunate that the younger generation, Daniel, he said, no, please, Mom, don't buy GMO.
Interesting. How did he pick that up, Suzanne, in school? I mean, was it a course, or how did he get the knowledge of it?
Silicon Valley. San Jose College, Silicon Valley College, you know how you transfer. And he had different instructors and professors. And going back 10 to 12 years ago, Daniel's going to be 34 soon, that he would share this with me when he'd come home from class. And he was a full-time employee, bless his heart, helped me a lot. That he enlightened me and, you know, I had worked hard, long hours, and he said, don't do it, Mama. Don't buy GMOs. Roundup has been dangerous forever.
Interesting that he would say that. And, Jeffrey, are some universities discussing this?
You know, it's interesting. There are some universities that are basically sold out to Monsanto. The land-grant university is the one that support agriculture. They get a lot of money from the biotech industry. UC Davis, I think, has a building named after Monsanto. And a lot of these land-grant universities, even Cornell, which is one of those, they get money from the Gates Foundation specifically to to try to convince people with propaganda that GMOs are healthy and safe and will feed the world and all that, which has been proven to be false for two decades. However, there is an emerging awareness. And so, you know, some people complain about their professors as being basically indoctrinated by Monsanto, and others are actually discussing it and are actually getting accurate information. But what Monsanto started to do is they created curriculum for elementary school kids, and they distribute that curriculum around the country. So a lot of kids in elementary school are getting this pro-GMO, pro-pesticide coloring books and homework and lessons and things to do in class that are basically a kind of a brainwashing or indoctrination. And so one of the things we want to do at the Institute for Responsible Technology is help distribute accurate information. And the caller was talking about this, her son, who is a millennial, and a lot of the millennials don't watch long movies. So my movie Genetic Roulette, which is popular around the world, I don't think we're getting as many people who are in their 30s watching it because they have a shorter attention span. So we also want to create shorter movies. But it turns out that if you look at the demographics, the younger generation is buying more organic than the older generation, so they're getting the message anyway.
Next up, let's go to Joe in the Bronx. Welcome to the program, Joseph.
Hey, George, how are you?
Good.
Jeffrey, the problem is that the war is not going to be won as long as organics are at the expensive prices they go for, because a majority of the population simply can't afford to sustain themselves on an organic diet at those prices. Now, can the government come around and supplement the cost of organics for people who would like to switch from a now GMO diet to an all-organic diet?
Excellent question. First of all, I want to say that the reason why organics are more expensive is because, in part, the conventional farmers are subsidized, but also because the demand is higher than the supply. There was an excellent TED Talk by someone who's investing in organic farms who analyzed it and figured out that it's actually not the cost of inputs and whatnot. It is, in fact, the supply and demand. And if there were more organic farmers, the price would come down. And there is an increase in organic land right now because the price is so high. So they're actually moving into organic because they want to get the premium, and that could help eventually bring the prices down. Secondly, in filming people for our upcoming film, Secret Ingredients, and you could see the trailer at secretingredientsmovie.com, we interviewed a family of six, and they had a medical bill of about $18,000 a year. They switched to organic. The medical bill went down to $9,000 the next year and $3,000 the following year. We interviewed two other families, and they said their kids don't go to the doctor between annual physicals anymore, where they used to be constantly going to the doctors. And so in every case, the amount of money they were spending on organic was less than the amount of money they were saving from their doctor's bills. Having said that, I still know that there are people who will find it very difficult to buy organic processed foods in places like Whole Foods. But if you can buy bulk and you can buy the raw ingredients and cook from scratch, it is much easier to sustain. Now, as far as being supported by the government, I remember there were two models in Europe. One was trying to give money toward the organic farmers, and one was trying to promote organic to the consumer. When it would promote it organic to the consumer, it had more effect. It was a better way for the government money to be spent. On the other hand, I think because there was a three-year transition from a person that's farming conventionally before they can actually call their things organic because of the detoxification of the soil, it is helpful if the government is able to supply some transition money that will allow these farmers to quickly and in large scale start to support the organic emergence.
I don't want to get too gross, but what's going on with corn and some of these high levels of putrescine and cadaverine?
Oh, you don't want to, what they're doing to corn right
horrible
now.
Horrible words, by the way.
Yeah, I know. It's like that gives the foul smell of a rotting dead body. That's in Monsanto's Roundup.
That's where we got putrid and
yes,
cadavers,
exactly. Cadaver,
right?
Exactly. and then those are actual terms. And in another type of corn, there was a switch on of a gene that's normally silent, and it produces an allergen. So it doesn't tell you on the label this corn contains gamazine, which is a known allergen. You would know what it is anyway. But if you're getting a reaction to Monsanto's corn, you won't know because it's not even labeled as GMO, and you don't know that you're allergic to corn, but it's not all corn. It's just a genetically engineered variety. Likewise, in Monsanto's soy, there's up to 7 times the amount of an allergen called trypsin inhibitor, which can reduce the way that our allergens are broken down. So if you're taking Monsanto soy, you might become allergic to a lot of other things. And it's interesting that in the 5 years after genetically modified soy was introduced, peanut allergies doubled. And we've written in the book, in Genetic Roulette, ways that might explain that, where the relationship between the GM soy mm-hmm. and the peanut allergies might be supportive.
International line, Kyla's with us in Toronto. Kyla, go ahead.
Hey, George, it's an honor to speak with you, Jeffrey.
Thank you.
I want to ask you what Archer, Midland, Daniel, they're not exactly most innocent in this whole GMO thing either. And I wanted to mention to you, I'm here in Toronto, and I mean, so many people I know, they just don't seem to care. It's like, yeah, well, so what? Well, why, what, you know, like, I mean, the amount of, I don't know, is it apathy or complacency or what? And why, what's wrong with our society that people just don't, I mean, people are so, the apathy and complacency, people just don't care. They say, yeah, well, so he died from something. And what, well, what's wrong? How did we get so screwed up as a society where we don't give a damn about anything anymore?
Thank you, Kyla. So let me talk about ADM, Archer Daniels Midland, and also Cargill, another major grain producer and ingredient supplier. Some years ago, as I was developing and enacting the plan to eliminate GMOs, people were saying, well, how can you eliminate GMOs with a tipping point when consumers demand it if there's so few suppliers out there? There's not enough acreage. And I said, well, companies like Archer Daniels Midland, ADM, and Cargill will become our allies, not because they are trying to help us, they're trying to help themselves when the consumer is demanding more, and that's exactly what's happening. ADM just invested in a new soy meal factory. Cargill just announced about 15 new non-GMO Project Verified ingredients. I'm talking about billions of dollars worth of ingredients that could be available soon. And so we're seeing that as individuals start to buy and to choose non-GMO, and we know that 25% of food purchases, according to one survey, are because of the non-GMO label. So all of these food companies are now shifting to non-GMO. So you're going to find people who are apathetic. You're going to find a couch potato who has no idea that food relates to health, and you don't need to convince them. What you do is you convince the moms, you convince the sick people, you convince those that help them.
You got to convince them all. Jeffrey, we're coming back for more. Final calls next. And welcome back to Coast to Coast, our final segment with Jeffrey Smith. Next hour, we talk about life after death. Jeffrey, how long have you been doing this now?
Since 1996.
What got you involved in it?
You know, I went to a lecture by a genetic engineer, an award-winning genetic engineer, who was intimately familiar with the details of the technology and was shocked that they were going to genetically engineer food and crops. He explained in a lecture that I went to that the process is prone to side effects, and no human on earth has been able to crack the code of DNA sufficient to protect us against the side effects, which means that things that we eat might damage our health. And as one of the callers pointed out, when you plant a GMO seed like corn, the corn can cross-pollinate with other corn fields, and what you've done is you've permanently changed the gene pool. And if you think about that, it means that there is no way to recall a gene, an altered gene pool, once you release it, because it self-propagates. The only thing that lasts longer is extinction. as long as a species exists, the gene pool will be altered. And I realized this was an A-plus problem. This was one of the top-level problems on the planet, and yet no one was paying attention. And so I decided that I would use my skills in education and marketing and communications to try and get the word out. And I ended up working at a GMO detection laboratory as vice president of marketing communications, where I kind of got paid for a couple of years to become more of an expert. And I was quoted in the New York Times and various places as I learned more about the details and realized that the American consumer was starving for information, and there was a lot more information coming out in Europe. So I decided to write the book, Seeds of Deception, and it was focused on the health dangers, because I realized even though the environmental catastrophe could be far worse, it doesn't actually create the action steps that we needed, which is to get people to stop eating them, which would create the economic incentives for the companies to stop using them. And so I focused on the health dangers, and that turned out to be the winning combination.
Earlier, we were talking about salmon and, of course, frankenfish. Frankenfish, of course, the derivative of Frankenstein. Tell me, what's wrong with eating genetically modified salmon?
Well, first of all, it is now available in Canada. It's not available in the United States, but it was released in Canada without labels.
Without labels. So you would not know. If you're at a restaurant and order salmon, you have no idea what you're getting, right?
My strong suggestion is if you're in Canada and you are ordering salmon and it is not wild caught, then do not buy it and do not eat it.
How would you know?
Well, you'd have to ask the restaurant, and we do know that there is a lot of disinformation or misinformation in the food industry.
And they may not even know.
Yes, it's true. And so a lot of times certain fish are sold as other fish. So it's really a complicated situation. But usually the better restaurants will tell you that it is wild caught and they know their supply chain. And if you're concerned, then you could avoid salmon altogether, which would be a shame for those that eat salmon and enjoy it. So when they tested the salmon, they found that there were higher levels of IGF-1. IGF-1 is an insulin-like growth factor 1, which is linked to cancer because it makes cells multiply. In fact, if you remember the genetically engineered bovine growth hormone that Monsanto introduced to inject into cows to increase their milk supply, their own Monsanto scientist, I was told by another scientist no longer at the company, found so much IGF-1 in the milk from treated cows that was related to cancer, Monsanto's own scientist refused to drink milk thereafter unless it was organic. One bought his own cow. So we have IGF-1 increased. We have also an increase in an allergic reaction to the salmon, but they tested it on so few people that they could not get statistical significance. Their whole test was on 6 fish, on very few people. I mean, it was basically designed to dumb down the science, to push it through, and when all of this information was pointed out by the Consumer Reports, by others, it was ignored by the government. And the FDA, which is pro-GMO, assembled a pro-genetically modified salmon group to try and push it through quickly. And even their own group that they assembled to be a rubber stamp of yes men, they said, no, the research is just too poor to approve it. And it wasn't really done well to the specifications. They just rammed it through and said, we're going to approve it. And so it's officially approved in the United States, but it hasn't yet been commercialized because of a law that was passed that requires it be labeled. And so now they're delaying the release until they figure out how they can label it. In the meantime, a lot of major supermarkets and restaurants have vowed not to carry. However, in Canada, it is available.
Cliff in Wichita Falls, Texas. Hey, Clifford, go ahead.
Okay, so like anybody with basic scientific literacy can read the data sheet for Roundup and find out that that stuff is designed, purpose-built, to degrade in water and in soil. This sensationalism for non-GMO stuff has really got to go. I am all for better scientific scrutiny over genetic modification and all that, and using words like organic. Literally everything that grows is organic. Like, the sensationalism is the problem I have with. Also, I wanted to say that traps are gay.
What did you say? I didn't even hear him.
I don't know what that... I love this question. I love this question, George. Give me a moment to work with this. Okay, so Monsanto, if you read the old literature about Roundup, they said that Roundup was biodegradable, that it degrades in the soil, okay? It was written on the bottle, and a New York court found Monsanto guilty of false advertising. Monsanto's own research showed that it only degraded by 2% in 28 days. Now we know that the half-life, the amount of time it takes to degrade in half, can be up to 22 years. So this, they were also, once they were told they can't declare it as biodegradable in the U.S., they still continued to lie in Europe until a French court, and then the French Supreme Court, declared them in violation of the law, and they were forced to stop lying about the biodegradation, the biodegradability. Now, in terms of the other aspects, in terms of degrading, they found in the radio-labeled studies, where they marked it, and they found that the glyphosate ended up accumulating in tissues throughout the animal. Now, how do I know this? Because the EPA's own research, not the ones that they did, but the ones that Monsanto submitted to them to get Roundup approved, and then that Monsanto asked the EPA, do not publish this, do not make it available. And they concurred. And because of a scientist named Anthony Samsel had help from his senator, the EPA agreed to release over 20,000 pages to the set to this scientist, who cannot reveal it to other people, but he can report on it in his own research. It turns out it was Monsanto's own research that showed that it bioaccumulates in different tissues and organs. And so if you go to healingfromgmos.com, you can find, we talk about it, it's a series of expert interviews that goes on until the 11th of December. We're taking down all the series at that point, but there's five up there today, and I'm going to add one more tomorrow, where you can find there are products that can reduce the amount of glyphosate in the body, that can break it down and push it out of the body, and also to reverse the impact. There was one scientist who actually did research on the glyphosate and exposed it to human cells, and they immediately broke apart. So the tight junctions became loose. If that happens in our gut, it's called leaky gut or hyperpermeable gut. And it is linked to cancer. It is linked to heart disease, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, autism, autoimmune disease, allergies. And he, in this particular Healing from GMOs talk, he talks about a supplement from 50-million-year-old soil that can bind those tight junctions back and protect from the documented risks of Roundup. So yes, I actually have evaluated the problems with Roundup. And if you go to, as another website for you, non-GMOs improve health, you can read a 21-page peer-reviewed article that I got published in the International Journal of Human Nutrition and Functional Medicine, which describes, has about 200 references in there, it describes absolute evidence showing that Roundup is not the safe as table salt as Monsanto tried. In fact, they're being sued by thousands of people because they had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, because the World Health Organization declared Roundup and glyphosate, its active ingredient, as a class 2A carcinogen. So we do have science on our side, Clifford, and I do know that Monsanto has been putting out disinformation for years. And so I don't blame anyone for getting the information, thinking that what we're saying is unscientific. In fact, Monsanto has attacked me for a long time. I'm calling for more science, and they're calling me anti-science. It's just part of the games that they play.
Walter's in Pennsylvania now with us. Go ahead, Walt.
Hi, George. As usual, it's great to be on the air with you once again.
Thank you, sir.
George, I live on a small farm here. I consider myself an environmentalist, and I would agree with, I believe his name is Mr. Smith, that there are certain things that should be kept out of the environment. Mm-hmm. For years, we had literally thousands, if not millions of tons of a compound called tetraethyl lead, which was put in our gasoline. And for the better part of 100 years, the railroads would dust the railroad beds and tracks with arsenic trioxide, which is extremely deadly to any living organism. But they had to, you know, that was the excuse, that they had to keep the brush and that away from the railroad tracks to prevent the derailments. Now, that being said, With deference to Mr. Smith, I think he's being somewhat of an alarmist and paranoid about Roundup. I've been using Roundup about 30 years, and I find it to be a great labor saver. I only use it like a third of the concentration of what the label recommends.
Well, that may make the big difference. What do you think, Jeffrey?
Well, I would say be really careful if you use it and realize that it doesn't necessarily degrade in the soil. I was talking to a scientist who used to spray it around his greenhouse, and he found out in a number of interesting ways that when he peed in the woods, his pee was killing weeds. And he did some research and found out that he was actually absorbing Roundup into his body, and when he stopped spraying it, his urine was no longer a weed killer. And he was realizing it was either coming through his boots or coming from skin. And so I want to suggest, I have just watched a farmer talk about how he was told that Roundup was safe, sprayed it his whole life, and developed non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he's in the lawsuit against Monsanto, and that actually is repeated by so many farmers and gardeners. So if you're going to use Roundup, please, please respect its toxicity and take very, very strong measures to protect your body from it, because it is a class 2A carcinogen, according to the World Health Organization, and so much more.
Next up, we've got Joe, Long Island, New York. Joseph, go ahead.
Yeah, hi, Jeffrey. Two questions. First would be on preserving the original heirloom or seeds. Seed banks, what's the latest with that before Dr. Frankenstein came in, you know? And then second, I had taken a free online course, Yale Open Courses on Environmental Studies, and very interesting. It pointed out that originally at Jones Beach here on Long Island, they sprayed DDT, they brought in trucks, and, you know, they had, like, on the truck, you know, this is safe or something to that effect. And subsequently, they found it was at eye level 5 years later. So the stuff really lingered.
Yes, we don't actually do the research or require the research to protect ourselves from the 80,000 chemicals that have been released into the environment, into products. And the research that's required by the EPA in terms of herbicides is so terrible, and pesticides is so terrible. I talked to one scientist who described it's basically 15 to 20 years out of date. And I can explain why, but we don't have time. But I will answer your first question. The heirloom seeds are critical, and the seed banks are critical. And it turns out the loss of biodiversity has been devastating. We used to have hundreds of varieties of seeds for fruits, certain fruits and vegetables, and in some cases we've reduced it by 90% or 95%. As industrial agriculture is demanding that things can be picked early and mechanically picked, etc., what they're doing, they're choosing food based on qualities that may not have anything to do with health or taste. And so it is this whole heirloom seed and heirloom garden movement is something that we should pay attention to, and it actually may improve not only the health but also the taste of food. And some people say when they go to Europe and try some of the heirloom varieties there, it's as if a tomato tastes completely different, or a potato, or whatever. So I strongly recommend that if people have interest in that they pursue it.
Nothing like a garden-grown tomato, Jeffrey. You know what?
Absolutely. And not a genetically engineered. But fortunately, there's no GMO tomatoes left. They were taken off the market. So that'll give some people relief.
Aren't most tomatoes, when they're shipped to the supermarket, somewhat green first?
You know, I don't know. I do know that they're... they don't taste as good as the heirloom. They don't taste as good as the ones that I had in Europe. And now, this isn't consistent.
And they also don't taste as good as they used to.
Yes, exactly. And they're uniform, and it's like, I don't quite trust the process. So I buy all organic anyway. And I also, there's a lot of heirloom tomatoes where I live in California, and they have incredible richness. And it's an amazing, amazing taste.
Wayne in Petaluma, California is with us. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah. Let me get you off the speaker here.
Just have a minute left for you, but go for it.
Yeah, I think your guest, what's his name, Jeff?
Jeffrey,
yeah. He said he was on a few years ago, and he was saying the same thing about the Pakistani farmers.
Indian farmers.
I understood it that it was Pepsi-Cola company had wanted to get water from the Himalayas, and so that they did was they Monsanto went in and gave the farmers the seed for a discount and put, you know, let them get it on time through Monsanto, like they financed it. And when they had their first crop, they let the cattle out into the fields, and there was a pesticide built into the seed that actually killed the cattle. And they had no tractor for the following year to sow the seeds and get their crops in because they had large acreages. And
another catastrophe, to be sure. Jeffrey, my friend, I want to thank you for being on the program. Keep in touch with us. Let us know when that new film comes out. Up next, Life After Death.